Church, thank you so much for taking time to connect with us today. Good morning, Crescent Campus. Hello to everybody watching at home, anybody at St. Greg's. If you got a Bible, grab it, open it, turn it on, follow along on screen in your outline, or use the Central Church app if you have it. If you don't have it, I strongly encourage you to download that. But you can turn to Genesis chapter 11. That's where we're going to start today. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 11, end of 11 and into 12. We're starting a brand new series today called Refueled, and we're going to take the next 4 weeks, and we're going to talk about what it needs to look like to spiritually fill our tanks. I'll start off today with a question just to kind of set the series up and explain kind of where I'm going. Everyone participate. Everyone needs to play along. It's all skate. How many of you have ever ran out of gas in your car? Just raise your hand. Now, I have a question for those of you with your hands raised. How do you run out? Because there's a gauge in your car that tells you how far you have, yes or no? Yeah. How many of you like to play the game, let me see how close to E I can get? Anybody like to play that? Or I wonder how many miles after E, or after my little light comes on, can my car go? How many of you, after it gets past half a tank, you start stressing? Anybody like that? I think because I'm like getting old or whatever, that's where I'm at. Like I try to do that now. When my kids were driving, when they started driving, they're still driving. But when they started driving, like I would tell them all the time, do not let this thing go below half a tank. And I just like tried to instill that in them, because like for me, like after a half a tank, like I don't want to run out of gas. Like I've been there, I've done that, I played that game, I don't want to do it anymore. And so for me, when it gets past half a tank, it's simple. Pull into Casey's, fill up, go get some pizza and a Coke or whatever, and you're good to go. Now, let me ask you another question for those of you who ran out of gas. When you ran out of gas, did you say, I hate this car? This car's pathetic. It's never going to work again. I might as well just go get another car. Probably not. Like, because when you run out of gas, you don't blame the car, because don't miss this. The car still has potential. It lacks power because it doesn't have any gas, but it still has great potential. We don't say, well, I ran out of gas and it's the car's fault, and I guess I just have to throw the car away or blow the car up or abandon the car and go get another one. No, it still has all kind of a potential, and it still has the power to get you where it needs to be. It just needs gas, right? Now, I know some of you are thinking, what in the world does this have to do with God, Jesus, the church, Christianity, the Bible, whatever? Well, here's where I'm going with this. If you had to identify where you are spiritually, and just answer this in your own mind. Don't answer out loud. Don't tell your neighbor where you are or anything like that. But if you had to identify where you are spiritually, where would you put yourself on this gauge? Because I know a lot of people who feel spiritually empty. And this is the thing I know, that when your car gets on empty, when your car has run out of gas and it's stopped on the side of the road, can we all admit it's stuck? Yes or no? Yeah, like it isn't going anywhere unless you push it. Well, the same thing's true spiritually. When we get spiritually, when we feel spiritually empty, or we get spiritually empty, we feel stuck. And some of us, we can let that become a permanent condition. Now, here's the thing. If you're here today or you're watching this and you feel spiritually empty, I want to encourage you that during this series, we're going to talk about how to live full. But in order to live full, you have to get full. Does that make sense? In order to live a full life, we have to be full. So we're going to talk about how to get full, because listen, this is true for me and it's true for you. One of these days I'm going to die. And when I die, I want to die with memories, not hopes and dreams. I want to live full. I want to live my life to the fullest. And I'm sure you want that as well. I want to live a very, very, very full life. You want to live your life to the fullest. So that's what we're going to talk about over the next several weeks. And we're going to do it by focusing on a dude in the Old Testament named Abraham. Everybody know the song? Father Abraham had many sons, and many sons had Father Abraham, and I am one of them, and so are you. So let's just praise the Lord. Right arm, left arm. If you've never heard that song, you better thank God. As a matter of fact, if y'all make me mad, we're going to teach that to your kids the entire month. And so anyway, we're probably not going to do that here. I want you to see the story, because this is what I know. Nobody wants to be spiritually empty. I know this about you because you're here or you're watching right now. If you showed up in church or you're hearing my voice, if you're in this room, I know you don't want to be spiritually empty. And so we're going to talk today. We're going to look at how to begin to move the needle. Now, this is what I'm going to promise you. I'm not going to promise you that by the end of this message, you're going to be on the full side of the tank. But I am going to promise you that I'll show you how we can begin to move the needle and get closer to being full and why that matters. Are you ready? All right, here we go. Now, stay with me for this first part because we're going to feel like we're reading through the Hebrew phone book because there's a lot of names, a lot of people, a lot of stuff. But stay with me because it's all important. Here we go. Genesis chapter 11, verse 27 is where we're going to start. This is the count of Terah's family. You said we're going to talk about Abraham. Wait, we'll get there. You got to develop it. Terah was the father of Abram. Now, this is going to be Abraham. God is going to change his name. So I'm just most likely throughout this series until we get to that point, I'm just going to call him Abraham. All right, so I don't have to keep going back and forth. So I'm going to mess it up, but I'm not messing it up in a bad way because eventually he is Abraham. So, and we know Abraham, not Abram. So anyway, Abraham, Nahor and Haran. And Haran was the father of Lot, but Haran died in Ur, which I always thought is a weird name. Like they're sitting around trying to figure out names for the city. Hey, what do you want to name the city? That's good. That's good right there. Let's go with that. Let's just call it Ur. Ur of the Chaldeans, the land of his birth, while his father Terah was still living. Now, during this time, 4,000, 5,000 years ago, if you were born somewhere, that's where you died. You didn't stray very far from your family or your subgroup because there was safety in staying where you are. You could almost say there was safety in staying stuck. Verse 29. Meanwhile, Abram and Nahor both married. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. Now, God's going to change her name to anybody know? Sarah. And so we're just going to call her Sarah instead of Sarai. So if I mess that up, I don't really mean to mess it up on purpose. We're just going to continue to call her Sarah. So Sarah, Abraham and Sarah, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. Milcah and her sister Ishka were the daughter of Nahor's brother Haran. Everybody got this so far? Everybody good? Following along? Who's got who and who's where? Verse 30. But Sarah was unable to become pregnant and had no children. Now, that's huge, so let's pause and kind of walk through this. In that culture, in that time period, if you couldn't have kids, you were looked down upon. Now, in today's society, I know people, and you know people, maybe you're one of those people, that infertility is something that you struggle with. But fortunately, we have science. And now, because of science, there are all kinds of amazing things where couples who struggle with infertility can have kids, like they can get help and have it. I mean, it's amazing. But they didn't have that 5,000 years ago. Abraham didn't have Google. He couldn't like go on and ask Google, why can't Sarah and I have a kid? What do we need to do? What pills do I need to take? So people thought in that time period, if people could have kids, well, there was obviously sin in their lives. There's obviously something wrong with you. People thought there's something not right about Abraham and Sarah, because if everything was all right, if things were good, they'd be able to have kids. And so because of that, don't miss this, because of that, they got labeled infertile. They got labeled disappointing to God. And you could almost say they got labeled as a sinner. And that will cause a person every time to run on empty. And I'm sure there are people watching, there are people in Creston, there are people here right now, you got labeled. You got labeled, and when you walked into the room, you wanted people to see you as a person, but they didn't see you as a person. They just know your story, and because they assume they know your story, they can't see you're actually a person with a heart and a soul that matters to God. I mean, I know that struggle, and there are people here, you've struggled with that, because at some point, in some way, you got labeled. Some people, maybe you've accepted the label that people have put on you. See, they put a label on Abraham and Sarah. And maybe they labeled you as, you know what? You're an addict. And you're always going to be an addict. And there's nothing you can do. You know what? You have depression. You're always going to have depression. Your mama had depression. Your daddy got depression. You're always going to struggle. you know what? You got anxiety. You struggle with anxiety? Man, you're always going to be anxious. And we've let what other people speak into us, what they think about us, so much that it causes us to be stuck. And when we feel stuck, we think there's no way that we could ever move forward. But watch this, verse 31. One day, Terah took his son Abraham, his daughter-in-law Sarah, and his son Abraham's wife, and his grandson Lot, his son Herod's child, and moved away from Ur. Moved away from Ur of the Chaldeans. He was headed for the land of Canaan, but they stopped at Haran, and what's that word say? They settled. They settled. They did what? They settled. And I want you to watch what happens when you're going from point A to point B and you settle. It might not happen physically, but it'll happen spiritually every single time. Watch what happens in verse 32. Terah lived for 205 years and then what? Died. Anytime we settle, something inside of us dies. So the deal here is that Terah settled. He was on the way to what would eventually become the promised land. Like, that's where he was headed. But he settled. He settled and died. And one of the things that keeps us on empty is we settle for the way things are. Oh, I guess it's just who I am. I guess what happened to me is going to define me for the rest of my life. I guess it's just what I do. And if I'm going to accept that label, if I'm going to take in everything everybody is saying to me and about me and I settle, eventually, spiritually, I will die, and so will you. Now we're going to get to the good part. Terah's dead. The Bible says this, Genesis chapter 12. Watch this, verse 1. Then the Lord said to Abraham, leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land I will show you. Now, when we read the Bible, I know I say this a lot. We know it. We read it knowing what happens in the story. Abraham had not read Genesis chapter 12. And I don't know about you, but if you came up to me and you said, hey, Pastor Ryan, let's go for a ride in my car. And I said, where are we going? And you said, well, you'll know when we get there. I'd be like, I ain't getting in your car. Not going. Well, Pastor Ryan, we're going to a restaurant. What restaurant are we going to? You'll know when we get there. You're going to eat by yourself. I need a little bit more information. And it's probably because I'm a little bit of a control freak, and it's probably a lot more towards I don't trust a lot of people, right? But I'm skeptical. And so when this pops up, Abraham, hey, I want you to take a walk with me. Where are we going, Lord? I'll let you know when I get there. Like, I'm kind of skeptical to that. Now, the reason that God is talking to Abraham about this is, number one, I think even if he explained it, like, Abraham couldn't imagine what God had prepared for him. But notice this, and this is not going to be a spoiler for most people. Abraham and Sarah eventually get pregnant in their 90s. In their 90s. They have a child named Isaac, who goes on to have Jacob, who goes on to have 12 more sons, who become eventually the 12 tribes of Israel, the nation of Israel. I mean, it's unbelievable. Abraham couldn't have comprehended that. And so what God is telling Abraham and Sarah also is, he said, Abraham and Sarah, I want to do something in you that's going to blow your mind. You've got greatness in you, Abraham. You've got greatness in you, Sarah, but I'm not going to do the miracle if you stay where you are. If you want to receive my blessings and you want to receive my promises, I want you to walk with me. And as you walk with me, I will develop you into the person that you need to become. Eventually, you'll see immeasurably more than you could ever ask or imagine. But if you stay where you are, if you stay in the environment that has labeled you and limited you, you will be empty for the rest of your lives. That's the same thing God says to us. If we stay in the environment that labels and limits us, we'll never step into what God wants for us, and we will remain empty. But God says, hey, Abraham, so let's go. Come on, just walk with me. Well, what does that look like, Ryan? Well, I'm glad you asked, and so I'll ask a question back. How can you walk with God without spending consistent time with God? I say this all the time, but how much time do you give God on a daily basis where you direct your focus on him? What do I ask all the time? What would happen? What would happen if you gave 10 minutes of your day, the first 10 minutes? What would happen if you gave the first 10 minutes of your day to God every day. What would that look like? To get out of bed, go somewhere in your house, sit down, read your Bible, maybe a chapter, maybe a few verses, maybe pray for the people closest to you, ask God to fill you with wisdom for the day. Like, how much better would that be than staring at our phones for the first 30, 45 minutes of the day? Like, I'm telling you, it'll begin to move the dial from empty to full. It doesn't happen overnight. I'm just saying, what would it take for you to do that and try that for a week? Do it for a week. Do it for a week and then just see how you feel about life spiritually at the end of that week. 10 minutes. It's the first 10 minutes every day. Because God tells Abraham, hey, I want you to walk with me. I want you to spend some time with me. I want us to be together. I want you to leave the land where they've labeled you. I want you to leave the land where you've accepted those labels. Listen, there's greatness in you, but in order for me to bring that out of you, you're going to have to walk with me in order to receive it. Then he says this, and this is great, verse 2. I will make you into a great nation. This is the first time that God hints that Abraham is going to have kids. I'm going to make you into a great nation. By the way, eventually it's Israel. Israel's a great nation, right? So God was right on this. Everything he says, he's right on. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will make you a great nation. I will make you a great nation. Now, the best way to illustrate this is by reminding you, I am never going to lead you astray when it comes to two things. What are they? Food and theology. Never. And so I want to talk about food for a minute. I know some of you are saying, I love it when you do those food illustrations. I'm going to show you this for a reason. This right here is a chocolate chip cookie. And this thing, oh, it's still soft. This thing, look at this. Look at this cookie. How many of you would like to eat this cookie right now? Moo-foo. Oh, that's really good. I probably shouldn't do this in the other services. You're going to have to stay with me for a second because I need some time to kind of talk this out so you'll understand it to teach it. God didn't make this cookie. God has never made a chocolate chip cookie. He hasn't. I know there's some of you that are thinking, well, in the Old Testament, he made manna. It's not the same. God did not make this cookie. If you were to walk up to me and say, Pastor Ryan, where did you get that cookie? And I said, oh, it's just all God. It's from God's heavenly bakery. It's just all God. You would say, I think Pastor Ryan's hitting the bottle. Somebody should check in on him. Now, let me say this. God made the ingredients for the cookie. God gave somebody the idea. I do believe it was heavenly inspired. Like, have you ever gotten a really good chocolate chip cookie that came straight from that's just incredible? Like, I mean, it's just straight from the oven. It's awesome. This is awesome. You should have Brenda make you chocolate chip cookies. These are great. Have you ever had a chocolate chip cookie that was just absolutely phenomenal? Yeah. But you've never had a chocolate chip cookie that came straight from God, right? Now, again, the ingredients, the inspiration, all of that is great. The devil got involved, put calories in it, but the original idea was good. God gave somebody the idea to open up a cookie store. God put all the ingredients together, all right? But God did not make this cookie. He just gave the what? Ingredients. When you see somebody who has a phenomenal life and you say, man, how did you get that way? And they say, oh, it's all God. That's a humble brag. It's not God. If it was all God, then everybody would have a phenomenal life. But God gave everybody the ingredients to have an amazing life. You see, those ingredients don't come together in the mixing bowl and start getting all beat up and everything. They don't come together until we start walking with him. And as we walk with him, he will make us into something great. As we walk with him, he will build us into something great. As we walk with him, he will develop us, mold us, and shape us into the people that he has called and created us to be. He said, I will make you into a great nation as you walk with me. You keep walking. And as you keep walking, you keep becoming. You keep walking, you keep becoming. You stop walking, you're stuck. But if you keep walking, because listen, there's going to be days, Abraham, where you wake up and you don't want to walk. And on those days, hey, guess what you need to do? Keep walking. There's going to be days, Abraham, where you wake up and people tell you you're stupid because you're just walking without knowing where you're going. You just keep walking. And I will make you into something greater than you could ever possibly imagine. That's God's promise for Abraham, and that's God's promise for us today. I will make you into a great nation. Just keep walking, keep becoming. And then he says this, I will bless you and make you famous. Make you famous. Make you famous. And he didn't lie. Because today, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, all different, but they all trace their roots back to Abraham. God made him famous. God said, hey, Abraham, see, one day there's going to be this place called Belarus, and there's going to be another place called Spain, and there's going to be this weird place named Carroll, Iowa, and all them people are going to know your name. Isn't that crazy? God said, I will make you famous. Did God follow through on his promise to Abraham, yes or no? He'll follow through on his promise to you too. He will. I will bless you and make you famous. And he said this, and I love this part. This is like therapy for me. Verse 3. I will bless those who bless you. Because as you're walking with God and you're becoming who God wants you to be, there are going to be people along the way that are going to walk with you and they're going to cheer you along. And God said, hey, you don't have to worry about blessing those people. I'm going to bless them for you. You just walk with me, and I'll bless the people that cheer you on. And Abraham's like, okay, God, that's cool, but what about the haters? And God said, well, I will curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on the earth will be blessed through you. God said, I'll handle the haters. God's basically telling him right here, hey, there's going to be opposition come your way. There are going to be people who don't like what you're doing. There are going to be people who walk away from you. There are going to be people who leave you. There are going to be people who talk behind your back. Hey, Abraham, let me handle the hate. You keep walking. You keep walking, because if you stop to handle your haters, then you stop moving forward. And you know what happens? You know what happens, church, when you stop to handle your haters? Your wheels start spinning, and eventually you run out of gas because you're so focused on your haters, you can't focus on God. I have some experience in this. That's why for me, I try really, 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 really hard not to engage with the haters. And do you know how hard it is for me to not engage? And it's not because I don't have something to say. But trust me, baby, I got all kinds to say. That's another message for another time. I try not to, because listen, if you're going to leave the place where they labeled you and you're going to walk out of their label that they put on you, you're going to get some hate. People don't want, like the people who are living on E, they don't want you to advance. They want to hold you back, because some empty people want to stay empty. And so as you start walking with God and we start becoming filled with his word and filled with his knowledge and filled with his spirit, they're going to try to hate. And God said, hey, Abraham, just walk. You just walk. You stay focused on the task. You stay focused on the calling I've given to you, and I will handle the haters. For me, listen, if I'd listened to the haters, I'd be living a life that I hate. Same thing true for you. If you listen to your haters, you're going to live a life that you hate. Now, let me pause. A hater is not someone who loves you and speaks some really good, awesome truth to you in private. A hater is somebody that you don't know that's giving you unsolicited opinions about stuff that they don't know. We good? We got that? Let's keep going. Verse 4. So Abraham departed. God spoke less than 100 words right here. This is huge. God speaks less than 100 words, and Abraham's like, all right, boys, saddle up. Let's go. Abraham departed as the Lord had instructed, and Lot went with him. Now, I need to say this, because this is going to play later on in the series. Not everyone who starts the journey with you finishes the journey with you. Lot causes Abraham to go completely crazy. In 2 weeks, we'll see this. It's absolutely insane what happens here. They start off connected, which is like, I always like to say this, it's super important to know who or what you're connected to, because who or what you're connected to will ultimately determine what you do or the focus that you go. And at this point, Lot and Abraham are connected, but they're going to get disconnected. It's going to be crazy. But for today, Lot went with him. Watch this. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. How old? 75. Now listen, I just turned 50 not too long ago, and I'm guessing when you get to 70, Aren't we supposed to slow down a little bit? I mean, just a little bit. Just a little bit. Maybe a little bit. I was hoping that at 50 I slow down just a little bit, but that's not been the case yet. I'm not saying quit. I'm not saying that at all. But I don't know about you. When I turn 75, I want to be on some beach somewhere with my toes in the water and my other body part in the sand. You know what I'm saying? At 75? At 75. At 75. And God's about to say at 75, hey, Abraham, you're going to be a dad. Nobody. There's not a man in this room. There's not a man watching online, sitting in Creston, that's like, hey man, what's your goal when you become 75? Well, if they're going to pop out some kids. At 75? Do the math. You'll be 93 when they graduate from high school. Just rolling up in your wheelchair. They see me rolling. 75. Can we all agree that's old? Yes or no? I know you might not want to say it, especially if you're sitting next to somebody that's in their 70s. But when you're in your 70s, I mean, come on. Verse 5. He took his wife, Sarah, which is good, because again, God's blessings have a lot to do with our connections with God and our connections with other people. Because don't miss this, you can't get full on your own. You're not going to move that needle. You're not going to get to full on your own. It takes other people on the journey to help fill us up, right? Wife Sarah, his nephew Lot, and all his wealth, his livestock, and all the people he had taken into his household at Haran. He headed for the land of Canaan. When they arrived in Canaan, now, let me just stop right here real quick and say this. The Bible kind of throws this in there. The original audience would have understood this journey took several months, several hundred miles, and they covered it on foot. Why? Because God told Abraham, hey, start walking. Where am I going? I'll tell you when you get there. He just walked with God every day. Every day he got up, and every day he walked with God. And the closer, don't miss this, the closer he gets to Canaan, we'll see this in a little while, the closer he gets to Canaan, the further he got away from the land that labeled him infertile. Isn't that great? Abraham traveled through the land as far as Shechem. There he set up camp beside the oak of Moreh. At that time, the area was inhabited by the Canaanites. Watch this, verse 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, I will give this land to your descendants. Abraham, you're going to have some kids. Like, I don't have any kids right now. And God, I'm like late 70s. I don't know what you're talking about. No. You're going to have some kids, and I'm going to give them this land. Now, I know what some of you might be thinking. He only had one kid. No, he actually has two. And we're going to talk about that the last week of the series. He has two. To this day, they're still fighting. They are. Abraham then built an altar and dedicated it to the Lord who had appeared to him. Now, let me show you this because this is so cool. Abraham built an altar and then he gave. Abraham built an altar and then he gave. You know why? Because he was full. When you become filled spiritually, something it happens inside of you. It's called an overflow. And when you start living out of the overflow, you're a giver. Now, that doesn't just mean money. I know you're tensing up right now. It includes it, but it means when you walk into a room, you're not taking, you're giving. You're giving encouragement. You're giving hope. You're giving love. You're giving peace. You're giving joy. When you become full as a result of walking with God, you don't have to tell people you're full. They just see it because you're a generous, giving person. And this happened to Abraham. It started when he was how old? 75. Can we all agree that maybe, possibly, perhaps, that's a little late for God to start doing something new? Well, it reminded me of something, and this is how I'm going to shut this thing down. I know that a lot of us are college football fans, and I know there are teams close by. I'm not going to dog out any teams. I'm not going to say anything about any of our close by teams. Nothing at all. I want to really bad, but I'm resisting the urge because I don't want you to be my haters. I really like the two football teams that I really like are Georgia Bulldogs, and I liked them long before they were back-to-back national champs and in it again this year. I like them because of their coach. I thought Mark Richt was great. But I really, really, really like Clemson football as well. And I like Clemson football mainly because I'm a Dabo fan. Any Dabo fans? Anybody is a fan of Dabo? Well, anyway, I was watching this interview one time with one of his former quarterbacks who now plays in the NFL named Trevor Lawrence. And he was doing this interview, and they were asking him about playing for Coach Dabo. And they were, like, just questioning, like what's it like, Trevor? Like, there are times when you've been down a whole bunch. There's been times when you're way up going into halftime. Like what does Dabo say to you, like, when you're down 18 points? And this is what he said. Every time, every halftime, Dabo says the same thing. Doesn't matter if we're up by 18 or down by 18, Dabo's going to tell us the same thing every halftime. This is what the great theologian Dabo Swinney says. Look at this. Ain't nothing less important than the score at halftime. That's good, isn't it? He tells the team, hey, if we're winning by a lot, don't get comfortable because the other team could come back on you. And if you're down by a lot, hey, don't worry about it because we can play ourselves. We go out, we can play some football. Ain't nothing less important than the score at halftime. I know some of you are saying, Ryan, I ain't coming here about Clemson football at halftime. Why are you bringing all this up? It's real simple. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Abraham most likely thought his life was over, but he was in halftime. Abraham thought his life was done because he's 75 years old with no kids. Sarah is thinking everything is bad. Everything is awful. I've wanted kids my entire life. I'm 75 years old. I can't have kids. I'm not going to have kids. There's no way something great is going to happen for me or for Abraham. But God said, hey, he's been halftime. Let's go play the third and fourth quarters. And in the third and fourth quarter of his life, those years resulted in ultimately Jesus coming about. You know, the one who paid for our sin. I would say to Abraham, played a pretty good second half. What does that mean for us today? It ain't over. It's not over. Abraham, 75 years old, and God said, let's get started. Let's get started. Hey, let's go. Let's get fired up. It's not done. You're at halftime. Maybe today you think it's over. Maybe today you think you're done, but you're not done because God said, I will give you immeasurably more than you could ever ask or imagine. Somebody needs to hear me. It's halftime. It's halftime. God's not through with you. We say all the time, if you're not dead, God's not. If you're not dead, God's not. If you're not dead, God's not done. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. He will never abandon you. Today, we need to let him know how much we love him. Because I don't know about you, but I'm thankful that he's the God of second chances and third chances and 287th chances. And just like he told Job, in Job chapter 42, God said, and Job was blessed more in the latter days of his life than he was in the former. That could be every single one of us. But we can't stay stuck. We got to get up. We got to move. We got to take our next steps. We have to keep walking. Let's pray.